Hello and welcome to Background Briefing. I'm Ian Masters, and today we'll look into a number of stories and issues in the news. We'll begin with the President's unveiling today of an expansive gun control initiative involving 23 separate executive actions in an attempt to get around a Congress in the pocket of the NRA. A former special agent with the ATF, the Bureau of Alcohol, Tobacco and Firearms, William Vizard, Professor Emeritus and Chair of the Division of Criminal Justice at California State University, Sacramento, joins us to discuss whether the President's end run around the NRA will reduce the epidemic of gun violence in America. Then we will speak with the author of a new book on Lance Armstrong, The Secret Race, Inside the Hidden World of the Tour de France, Doping, Cover-Ups, and Winning at All Cost. New York Times bestselling author Daniel Coyle joins us to discuss the fate of the popular athlete whose fall from grace into a swamp of costly litigation is just beginning, as we wait to learn about the extent of his contrition in an interview with Oprah Winfrey to be broadcast Thursday and Friday. Then finally, Richard Wolff joins us. He's a professor emeritus of economics at the University of Massachusetts Amherst and author of Occupy the Economy, Challenging Capitalism. We will discuss the ongoing battle between the power of money that has captured our money-driven politics and the power of people who may or may not rise up to assert their ownership of their government and their economy. Joining us now is Dr. William Vizard, a professor emeritus and chair of the Division of Criminal Justice at California State University, Sacramento. He is the author of Shots in the Dark, Policy, Politics, and Symbolism of Gun Control, and Shots in the Dark, A Political History of the Bureau of Alcohol, Tobacco, and Firearms, as well as numerous articles on gun control, justice, policy, policing, and investigation. Dr. Vizard served 30 years in law enforcement with the Fresno County Sheriff's Department and as a special agent with the Bureau of Alcohol, Tobacco, and Firearms. Welcome to Background Briefing, Dr. William Vizard.
Thank you. Although I do have to correct you on the title of the second book. They aren't both titled Shots in the Dark.
Okay. What's the second book then?
In the Crossfire.
Oh, In the Crossfire. I'm sorry. We have... Okay, well, I'll fix the bio and next time I'll get it right. But let's talk about the President's fairly ambitious initiative here. Am I right in the premise of my introduction that a lot of these executive orders are designed to get around the fact that the Congress is so much in the pocket of the NRA?
Well, they're designed to bypass Congress. I don't know that I would call them ambitious. There's really a pretty limited range of action that can be taken by executive order at this point. At one time, before the 1986 Firearms Owners Protection Act, by executive order and regulation, you could have done a fair number of things, but it's pretty constricted at this point.
So of all of these ideas of the executive orders and paperwork initiating immediate administrative actions, including steps to strengthen the existing background check system, promote research on gun violence, and provide training in dealing with active shooter situations, of all of – and there's a lot more in the fine print – putting the 10-round limit on ammunition magazines, a reintroduction of the assault weapons ban, banning armor-piercing bullets. What do you think Chuck Schumer has said that the sweet spot, if you will, in all of this is talking about a push for universal background checks, meaning that he thought that had the best chance of succeeding.
Well, I frankly don't think any of them have a chance of getting through the House. I don't know about the Senate. But if you look at the composition of the House, I would think it would be very unlikely that this House, which means at least for the next 2 years, I think it's very unlikely. Probably the most popular proposal with regard to the public, and it has some potential for affecting the nature of commerce and firearms, although more limited. You know, once you get to the implementation side, there are a lot more problems with it than anybody's discussing.
Well, of course, I think the President, in a way, acknowledged this by saying the only way we can change is if the American people demand it. And This is what I find extraordinary, William Azzard, is that the NRA claims to be a powerful organization and exerts inordinate control over the Congress, yet it has only about 4 million members, and lately apparently they've been inflating their numbers. With a population of the United States, that makes them about 1% of the population. So what's it going to take to wake up the 99%?
Well, you start with, you don't have 99%. You've got a very small percentage of people who are very, very dedicated to strict gun control. You've got a larger body of people who are very, very dedicated to opposing any kind of gun control. And then you've got a very large, fluid middle body, which shifts back and forth. You've seen a big shift in the last few weeks with regard to polling, but they're not really very committed one way or another. So it's one thing to say you're in favor of something. It's something else to actually vote based upon that. And the reality is that there isn't enough perception on the part of members of Congress in key districts that it benefits them that they're going to vote that way. So, there are a lot of borderline districts in which members of Congress believe that opposing the NRA is not in their benefit. And then there are other districts where they're just dead set against it ideologically.
Well, the NRA obviously play hardball, and their ads that they put out now are pretty disgraceful, where they show pictures of the president's children and say, how come they get protection and the president's a hypocrite, he won't allow your children in schools to be protected while his are protected by the Secret Service. So they're already on the offensive, and they seem to be in many ways, in spite of the horrors of what happens with these repetitive massacres at the hands of people who were, many of whom had clear problems with their mental health, nevertheless, the sale of guns goes up and NRA membership goes up, if you're to believe what they're saying. What about, and at the end of the day, their threat is that they'll spend unlimited amounts of money in a primary to get rid of you if you don't play ball with them. What about
their ground game is as important as their spending. I mean, they do spend, but there are a lot of people who spend and spend a lot more than the NRA. They have some very, very dedicated supporters, and a few million. You know, a million dedicated supporters is frankly a lot, because remember, we've got over 300 million people in the United States, but the vast majority of people don't vote. And it depends where those people are located. The Senate is skewed in favor of small states and rural states. And right now, the House is gerrymandered in favor of conservative Republicans. So, you've got some structural advantages there. Long term, I would agree with you that long term, if you look at patterns of gun ownership, the NRA has a long term demographic problem, very similar to what the Republican Party has. But that's long term. That's not immediate.
But as the president pointed out today in announcing these initiatives, more than 900 of our fellow Americans have died at the end of a gun since the Sandy Hook Elementary School massacre. And every day we wait, the number will keep growing. Again, the horror and the dysfunction of the system of the situation doesn't seem to penetrate, or at least it doesn't have a shelf life. Is that the problem?
For those people who are really opposed to gun control, they view it as a moral issue, an ideological issue, and frankly, they would argue that if people didn't die by guns, they'd die by something else. So that's that group. In terms of the great middle, people who kind of shift back and forth. Number one, it's about their fourth or fifth most important issue. I mean, most people don't vote on one issue. The advantage the NRA has is that they've got members who vote on a single issue. But most people don't, and there are so many other issues that push voters, and there are so many other issues that push administrations. I mean, if you just look at what's facing this administration right now, gun control is a top level issue this week. But they've got to deal with international relations. They've got to deal with the budget. They've got to deal with the sequester. They have to deal with the limit on borrowing. There's just a multitude of issues you have to deal with, and a really intransigent minority can fight fairly successfully under those circumstances. And for those folks who are on the other side of the issue, they believe they've got the moral high ground. I mean, you can disagree with them, but you have to understand they really believe it. I think there may be some folks in the, who work for the NRA for whom it's more an occupation than it is an obsession. But the members of the NRA board, the staunch supporters of the NRA, truly believe in what they're advancing.
Again, I'm speaking with Dr. William Vizard, Professor Emeritus and Chair of the Division of Criminal Justice at California State University, Sacramento, and he's a former special agent with the Bureau of Alcohol, Tobacco, and Firearms. And but one of the things that the NRA have always stressed, and they're stressing it again today, is that they are trying to protect the rights of law-abiding Americans to have guns. And I'd like to get a handle on how many people have been somehow had their Second Amendment rights infringed at home, protecting their homes. My understanding is there's an awful lot of guns out there. So I don't understand why you need more guns or need assault weapons to protect your own home, and how often homes are invaded by criminals and people are either unable to defend themselves, or those that are able to defend themselves are not sufficiently armed. That's at the heart of what they're talking about. But so much of the legislation that they've managed to put through the Congress and the extent to which they've tied the hands of your former agency, the ATF, indicates to me that in many ways they are protecting criminals, not law-abiding citizens, because you can't trace guns that are used in crimes, and that's because the NRA have made that impossible.
Well, they haven't made the tracing impossible. They've made it more. It's certainly more difficult. It's slower, and it's far more awkward. There's no question that a libertarian approach to gun laws isn't particularly helpful to law enforcement. The characterization of people breaking into your home and you having to defend yourself, although it occurs, obviously, is not a very common, that's not the most common crime in the United States. It's a relatively rare crime. Most burglars try to go into empty homes. But there are enough of those incidents, certainly, to develop a certain amount of fear in citizens. The problem, there is some behavior on the part of some advocates of gun control that play into this, though, rather well. And let me give you an example. New York just passed a bill that set the magazine limit on firearms at 7 rounds. There are virtually all the semi-automatic pistols in the United States except magazines with more than 7 rounds. Now, most of those firearms now have been, the magazines can now be purchased to hold 10 rounds because of California's law and because of the former federal statute. This is going to mean that anybody who owns a semi-automatic pistol in the state of New York within the next year has to divest themselves of those magazines, acquire new magazines, and so on. That's going to be viewed by the gun community, for lack of a better term, as kind of a one new step back door in an attempt to completely abolish private ownership of handguns. That tends to develop, I think, more fear and paranoia then it produces benefit. So, you know, if the goal is to prohibit private ownership of handguns, then, you know, say that the goal is to prevent private ownership of handguns. And a case can be made for that. But there is a tendency sometimes for advocates to pursue laws just for the sake of pursuing that particular law because they think that's the one thing that they can push through. So people ask me all the time, do you favor gun control? And the first thing I tell them is I can't answer that question because you haven't asked me a rational question. That's like saying, do you favor public health? Do you favor health care? It depends on the particular proposal. What's the cost? What's the benefit? How's it going to be implemented, et cetera? And almost nobody discusses that. They talk about it as kind of a broad panacea. For instance, trying to control magazines and ammunition is very, very difficult, almost impossible. Controlling firearms by their basic design features is a whole other story.
Well, just in closing, though, of the 900 people that the president mentioned today that have been killed by guns since the Sandy Hook massacre, what do we have any idea of how many people were killed either defending their homes or were killed by people defending their homes? I was just trying to get a sense of how the propaganda of the NRA versus the reality of America today.
Probably very few. I mean, to start with, every time the number of deaths with firearms is quoted, it includes suicide. So a very large portion, very possibly a majority of those are suicides. Then most homicides that occur with guns occur in one of two situations. They're either familiar people, you know, family members, et cetera, who shoot other family members and kill them, or the most typical homicide is a young male at a party or a bar or someplace where alcohol is consumed who gets in some kind of a disagreement, pulls out a gun and starts shooting and either kills the person they're trying to kill or two or three innocent bystanders. That's become the most common homicide in the United States. And it's a result of a lot of gun carrying, along with other things. But very few of those homicides probably involved anybody in a house or trying to get into a house or protecting a house. I mean, those just don't account for very many of our shootings.
Well, Dr. William Vizard, I thank you very much for joining us here today.
All right. You're welcome.
Again, I've been speaking with Dr. William Vizard, Professor Emeritus and Chair of the Division of Criminal Justice at California State University, Sacramento. He's the author of Shots in the Dark, Policy, Politics, and Symbolism, Gun Control, and a subsequent book, A Political History of the Bureau of the Alcohol, Tobacco, and Firearms, as well as numerous articles on gun control, justice policy, policing, and investigation. Dr. Vizard served 30 years in law enforcement with the Fresno County Sheriff's Department and as a special agent with the Bureau of Alcohol, Tobacco, and Firearms. We're going to take a brief station break and we'll be back talking about Lance Armstrong's mounting legal problems.
But it won't be long, 'cause kids with guns, easy does it, they got something to say.
Well, they're turning.